The Lifetime Athlete Podcast. Health, fitness, performance, longevity, the will to win, refusing to lose, never say die. Do what you love. Hunt, hike, lift, bike, ski, run, become and remain hard to kill. On the playing field and in the game of life. Training, nutrition, lifestyle, gear. Putting more life into your years. I'm your host, John Zombro. Let's kick ass. At life, for life. Hey guys, thanks for being with me today. And it's early in the morning. I had to get up at about 4:30 to take my wife to the airport. And that's a little early for me. I generally try to wake up around 5:45, and so I've been just taking advantage of the morning, winning the day, getting a lot of things done, including getting to be here at the pod station. This is hopefully going to be a relatively brief episode. I'm not sure where it's going to come out, but I'm going to guess it's going to be around 30 minutes. Next week, I've got Ryan Jordan coming on the show, and he and I are going to be talking uniquely about nutrition. And what's cool about this upcoming show, that'll be episode 303. Today is number 302. What we're going to do in that show is we're going to present five items each around nutrition. And so we'll be taking turns, and there'll be 10 items total. It's not necessarily our top five lists in terms of priorities, or I don't even know what he's going to bring. I told him not to tell me, and I'm going to do the same. So whether we show up with principles or superfoods or things like that, I think it's going to be informative. He's always such an academic and well-studied person, and it's fun to have a conversation with Ryan. So that's coming up. Just wanted to let you guys know about that. And today, it is episode 302. It's another one of our Animal Fit series, and I think this one's going to have a bit more entertainment. You're going to probably get informed a bit, but maybe also get entertained as well. I'm going to be talking about some advanced training principles. Going to use a few terms and then also share a case study from the book. Now, there are a lot of case studies in the book, and I'm going to share some of those more exclusively or extensively in a future episode. And I also want to cover some of the frequently asked questions that I've compiled from talking to folks who read the book, giving presentations on the book, and clients that I've worked with. So that's kind of stuff that's going to come up in this Animal Fit series. It's been a great one. I've really appreciated the feedback I've received from podcast listeners on this series, as well as folks who've purchased the book. And you can get your copy if you're interested at thelifetimeathlete.com. Just hit the Animal Fit menu item, and you'll learn all about this body typing and training program system that allows you to unleash your inner beast and unlock your athletic potential. Take a quiz, look at some pictures of the animals in the kingdom, figure out which one you might be, look at some examples among performers and athletes of different types, and then grab a copy. So getting into today, I'm going to start with kind of what I'm going to describe, and others do as well, as bro talk. Bra! Well, so just so we don't take ourselves too seriously, here are a few expressions of bro talk that you may want to keep in mind as you're designing as well as performing your training. Crushing. This is the art of getting it, in other words, the workout, done, and in smashing fashion. In other words, you've been crushing it in your workouts is quite a recognition and indicates you're accomplishing the goals of your training. Savage. The state of having a voracious appetite for training, in effect being highly motivated and really getting after it. She is the savage of our group, identifies that team member who always brings the A game and elevates everybody else as well. Stepping up. Taking one's turn at a lift or rep, or assuming a leadership role in a session. He really stepped up in practice is a great compliment. Beast mode. The use of controlled aggression to execute a lift, a rep, or a session can be used sparingly during brief and tense aspects of training, as long as it doesn't turn into straining, which is counterproductive to optimal movement quality. Wow, you went beast mode on that last circuit. It's heard in the gym from time to time. Since it's early in the morning, I've got to have a little more of this coffee, and I think I've already had too much. Good pause, though, because this next term, pain cave. Although a commonly used term, this is really not a place that you want to find yourself very often. Such as, I really went to the pain cave in that session, suggests that you may have stayed in beast mode a bit too long. It's fine to go all out here and there, but that shouldn't be the major focus of every workout. Hurt locker. This is potentially where you will reside if you spend too much time in the pain cave. A workout that causes extensive breakdown in the body leads to an extended recovery time following the session, or even within the latter part of an overcooked workout that's filled with soreness, stiffness, and a general feeling of beatdown. I've been in the hurt locker for 3 days is not what you want to say very often, if at all. Shutting it down. The use of wisdom and instinct to back off or discontinue an exercise or session when something doesn't feel right, and one is most probably on the verge of illness or injury. When a coach is observing an athlete faltering in a movement with a wonky hamstring, he will quickly shout, "Shut it down." And finally, we have phoning it in. Also known as sandbagging, this is the practice of bailing, wimping, or wussing out in the presence of challenge. But in the absence of any issue other than a temporary lapse in mental fortitude. I'm pretty sure I phoned it in on that last rep. It's something we've all probably said at least once. No matter how beastly we may be, we are all human. Okay, so now for these advanced principles, let's talk about designing your ideal animal training program. You know, we talked in the previous Animal Fit series episode about those beast-specific workouts, just some samples, some ideas for each of the 9 critters in the kingdom. And now we're just going to go through a few of the other elements of program design. So first of all, the sky is the limit, or it's your limit. There are an infinite number of fitness or performance goals and just as many ways to reach them. And second, there are no rules except for the ones that you wish to make. That stated, most animals will have 1 or 2 things they want to improve with their health, their body image, or their athletic ability. Pick one or maybe a few if they're related and can be trained simultaneously, and enjoy creating your own system. Here are some of the guidelines that I use when I'm helping clients to formulate their paths to excellence. So we've got the time frame. This is extremely dependent on the interaction of the specific goal and the animal's current condition, but somewhere between 6 weeks and 4 months is a common span. 6 weeks is long enough to make a bit of a change with dedicated effort, and 4 months, maybe even only 3 in many cases, is just about as long as even the most motivated folks seem to be able to stick with a program and really drive it. There are exceptions in long-term athletic development models, of course, but for the most part, 6 to 16 weeks is a great focus period when you're designing something like this. Weekly workouts. Now, the animal-specific suggestions that we went over earlier are great places to start. What you should do is make up a few bread-and-butter workouts that are similar to those designs for your animal and then customize them to your needs. Using your neurotype, figure out what type of workload you might require, and experiment with that a bit. Depending on your variables, such as intensity, frequency, and duration, place several of these workouts, more or less depending on that neurotype, in your week, and then fill around them with lighter, supportive recovery sessions. Sometimes I call that backfilling. You know, we put the fitness makers or the workouts that have the key performance indicators in them a couple a week, maybe 1 for someone my age, maybe 3 for someone who's younger, and then everything else just kind of fills in, and that gets into maybe almost an 80-20 deal where about 20% of your stuff is the really go get them, and then the other 80 is on the, you know, more, I don't always want to say restorative, but it's, you know, just it's filling in things without overstressing you. Okay, we talked about time frame and weekly workouts. Now we've got periodization. So this is just taking a figurative step backward and look at your program from a big picture perspective. Do you see the places where you may want to ramp intensity up or volume down? Is there a time when a certain skill or component would be most advantageously implemented? You want to use your knowledge and your instinct or consult with your coach to tweak the program design optimally. And that's, you know, really important when you're using these longer time frames to kind of properly build up the body and have those planned plateaus and regressions in there so that your ultimate outcome is quite high instead of a crash. And lastly, we've got recovery. Just emphasized it already several times, but perhaps it cannot be emphasized enough. You always want to make sure you're recovering well from your training. So anytime things aren't right, you can download workload volume. Now, remember, workload is kind of that combination of things, frequency, intensity, workout duration, total volume, all that stuff works together. Even density, or in other words, in some workouts, how much you compress or lengthen rest periods. But that workload, it's something we can keep our finger on, its pulse. And if you notice you're not recovering, you know, obviously work on making yourself better recovered, but also just temporarily download or down-regulate that workload. And it does wonders. And you don't really lose the path that you're on when you catch it early. Just have total confidence. This helps you to more effectively absorb training and actually preserve your health in the long run. That's one of the art forms that we try to emphasize here at TLA, learning all the time and growing. Now, over time, you'll become an absolute master at this. You'll know how to care for, feed, and train your inner animal. And it sounds cute and trite, but it's really true. You know, you get very skilled when you use these principles and think about it and just kind of get to know yourself to unique and deep degrees. So by now, a lot of things are becoming probably quite clear. Matching training to your inner animal and then choosing fitness pursuits or sports that align with your beast's gifts is fairly straightforward, if that's what you want to do. Knowing what to work on and how to extract max performance might be looking fairly obvious, and understanding what to adjust or emphasize over your lifespan. As we talked about that, you know, max min, mod mod, min max. You can keep your animal functioning optimally, undoubtedly, for a long time. And probably all this is making sense because we've really drilled down on it. But what if you really desire, and this is what this episode's all about, to do something in your training and have an outcome or a performance, at least on a physical level, that seems quite a bit removed from your natural animal way or your animal's preferences? Well, you absolutely can and should go for it. One option is to carefully transition into training like a different animal. So, you know, if you've been doing one set of things for a long time and you realize that the sport or activity that you want requires a different number of characteristics, you can align with that animal. But you have to do that very gradually, and that's important. See how that works. It just might work quite well, because one thing about us human beasts is we're adaptable and we're filled with potential, and motivation can do many great things. Now, that approach is also a great way to gain appreciation for the magnificence of all the critters in the animal fit kingdom, especially when you put yourself in another's paws or shoes. But there might be a more scientific and effective way to approach a unique goal. What if we use some of the things we've learned to potentially 10x the result? I think I'm going to 10x some coffee right now. Do you remember way back in when we were having these discussions when I mentioned that a bear might want to run a marathon? I think it would be a reasonable demonstration for me to describe what I would do if I were coaching the bear in this situation. So we kind of assume bears and marathons, that's not the most natural fit. But to set the scenario, let's say we have a healthy 42-year-old female who describes herself as a pure bear with a large skeleton, relatively high joint mobility, outstanding muscle development and power, and a training background, believe it or not, in power lifting. She has a bucket list item, of running a marathon. So her goal is to complete the event, not necessarily to become a world-class racer, but to do it just one time, check it off her list and feel good about it and not get hurt in the process. And let's say she's hired me to coach her through this project. Imagine that. Well, first of all, let me state something that will possibly make me unpopular with some of this audience. I'm actually not that crazy about the marathon. While I do believe that running as a basic function is an evolutionarily consistent component of our human genome, I feel that marathon running is farther than most people, with perhaps the exception of those coyote folks who are descendants of ancient messengers, should be locomoting. So if a person's able to run, they can get all the fitness they could possibly absorb by running much less than marathon distances. But again, the marathon's popular, it's a goal, and so we have to, kind of respect that. And also, here's an interesting thing. It's almost a play on words. Since the definition of marathon is not synonymous with moderation, there can be excesses of mechanical and metabolic stressors to be considered when we're doing one of these endeavors. So I'm all for fitness and for competition. But I've grown to question the value of some of these, like, mass movement or mass participation marathons. Yeah, there's good in it, but I don't know. I think there's better. Just me. But if I can't talk a client out of running a marathon, at least what I can do is help them to do it safely and successfully. So thank you for letting me put that out there. And we're going to talk about this. So how do we do the marathon with a bear? So in beginning this training and coaching journey, we should take stock of what the bear's coming into the program with in terms of known variables. Okay, she's healthy, she's fit with respect to strength and for certain, currently has no known injuries and is highly motivated. Now that's a great set of attributes. She describes herself as a type 1A in terms of being a neurotype, being guided on a daily basis by the red-tailed hawk, and she has a limited time for weekly training of about 6 hours per week. So we just know these things. So we know what kind of workouts she's probably going to like as a type 1A. She's probably a day person with respect, again, to the chronotypes, and then 6 hours a week is what we've got to work with, and that's what we're going to do. Bear also gives herself the letters ESFJ as per that MBTI that we went over in the personality section a while back. She's got a supportive husband and family and a work environment in that everyone's willing to see her succeed at this and help her to achieve the goal. Nutrition's good. She's got some experience there, and Ms. Bear, if you want to say that, is very knowledgeable about the relationship of food, health, and training from her extensive weight training background. So this is a great situation because we're starting from a clean slate with only a program to build and virtually no obstacles other than physiology to circumvent. It isn't always this easy, but I'll take it. So now we look at the goal and the timeline. We found a local marathon that's about 4 months out from the current time. We make a commitment by getting Ms. Bear registered for the event. That's big. You know, when you sign up for something, it kind of makes that commitment, and away we go. We recognize that the marathon is almost entirely about aerobic endurance and muscular fatigue resistance in the lower extremities, and understand that this is the primary target in program development. We decide to break that four-month program into four separate but interconnected months of training. It's one way to do it, but this way we did it. So in month one, I want to have Ms. Bear do some preparatory work for her goal. I recognize she's a 1A bear, and throwing her into a type 3 coyote-based program might not be the most wise or successful idea. Instead, we decide to stick with a modified 1A training pattern and make our initial goal to get some neuromuscular and cardiovascular adaptations, which occur rapidly in training. Get those things going. We decide to train every day in regards to frequency, but we will significantly lower intensity because the 1A model, again, that this bear utilizes, generally works better for strength applications than for endurance. Dropping intensity allows us to get away with more frequency. We design a training split that is a running, cycling, lifting, running, cycling, lifting, hiking for each of the 7 days. So you see the exposure to running is actually only twice per week. We're doing a ton of cross training in this athlete. Several reasons underlie this setup. First, Ms. Bear is a Bruin with high body weight and mobile joints, also with no real running experience. To have her pound the pavement every day would be unwise. By having the running exposure both minimized and spread out, we can get some training effects without too much ground reaction force exposure and thus significantly lower the risk of potential injury. The running program involves a 30-minute sandwich model in which each run is bracketed by some walking, that's the bread, on either side of the running, which is the meet. We'll start off with just 10 minutes of very easy, low-intensity, steady-state jogging in the middle of the sandwich. And then we'll gradually make the bread thinner until it's non-existent at the end of the month. And the entire 30 minutes is performed via running. That's a very sensible progression. I'll also provide some coaching input on running form, stride, and strike mechanics, things like that for our bear. The cycling days will allow us to get in some additional low-impact endurance training. Use maybe just a bit more intensity there, and even push those up to an hour per session over the month, at least some of them. Ms. Bear has a background in lifting, and we'll use this to our advantage, as that experience makes her a very proficient weight trainer. Plus, it keeps her in an arena of comfort and confidence. However, we'll move her away from a powerlifting focus and instead concentrate on moderate resistance, higher rep lifting, and body weight moves. More emphasis will be placed on running-specific muscular endurance with exercises such as walking lunges. The hike gives us several great things at once. Our client can do this, first of all, with her family and friends. She can increase the... she can increase the all-important tolerance to time on her feet, because we may be looking at a five-hour marathon. And a 90 to 120-minute outing fits into her schedule, particularly on the weekend. Now, as we progress to month two, here's how we'll kind of line this one out. We'll assess how the first month went and make any adjustments necessary. The neurologic and cardiovascular adaptations specific to running will be occurring, and we can now begin to target the muscles and connective tissues, which take a little longer to respond, respectively. Okay. We'll carefully plot out a coyote-style training month. But again, we're going to be careful here because we're dealing with a bear with only 4 workouts per week, keeping within that 6-hour limit. So it's a little different than month one. There'll be 3 runs per week, each of about an hour. However, we'll really hold the intensity down and just keep it at low intensity, steady state, you know, zone 1-2, as this is what the marathon mainly requires. And we don't want to push our bear much just yet. The 4th aerobic workout will be hiking again, and we'll gradually increase that to as much as 2.5 hours. Resistance work will continue in a similar fashion, but will be blended with more agility-type training and shortened to 2 very brief 15-minute sessions per week. So they're just tacked on to the end of any of these running, hiking workouts, as long as this is on non-consecutive days. Now, moving into month 3, things get fancy here. We have 2 things to recognize. First, this is probably the most critical month in the program with respect to getting in the most specific training. And second, Ms. Bear has a 6-day business trip that she said she had on the schedule occurring in this month. So we may have to compromise training slightly. We got to work around the realities of life. We make the program as coyote-like as we think we can get away with, doing some specific running workouts, pulling out the hike, and cutting the weights to just 1 day per week of maintenance. So you can see how this is trickling into specificity gradually to not shock our bear. Each week we do a moderately long run, which can include walking as needed, that begins at 1.5 hours and progresses to 2. We also have what we're going to call a cruise interval, or kind of a higher intensity interval or repetition training session that incorporates 10 minutes of warm-up and cool-down jogging with 2 times 10 minutes at what we're going to call the FTP, or the lactate threshold. And, you know, I'll help her figure out exactly where that is and how to coordinate that with either pace or heart rate. We return to the bike now in this program, doing 2 days again in the week to intersperse some, you know, mechanical but not aerobic deloading between the runs. So in other words, say that differently, we're going to keep doing aerobic training, using the bike as a tool without beating up her legs. Evaluating that third month, what we find is that things went fairly well, and even the business trip itself wasn't a disaster. The long run of that week got accomplished prior to leaving, and an easy run and bike ride in the hotel fitness center also happened. We decided this was a win, as the reduced training was enough for Ms. Bear to feel successful and confident, as well as actually be somewhat refreshed from the recovery aspect of that training reduction. I'll admit that I expected this to happen, as most clients really struggle to hit their training when they're on the road, and I just consider this to be necessary downtime. In setting up month four, it's the fourth and final month now, I shared with Ms. Bear how the last few weeks are usually the most dangerous and calamity-filled time for many self-coached athletes. This is because they're really starting to get fit, and they have a hard time resisting the temptation to do just a little more. Longer, harder, faster, all of those. They want to test it. Well, this seductive self-testing pursuit often drives a rookie off a training cliff. So I help our locomoting Bruin to realize she's done a lot of great prep, and the only thing we can do with an overzealous final month is screw that up. We divide up the training to have the best of all worlds. Now, week one, this is month four, features a hike-run combo of 3.5 hours with the only goal of just being out there, moving along, having fun, getting that time in. We use this opportunity to test shoes, clothing, fueling strategies, and other items, which will be race day considerations. The rest of the week includes two recovery bike rides and two of those resistance and agility-based micro gym sessions. We also get Ms. Bear a massage and start making a concerted effort to help her get just a tiny bit more sleep. So we're talking about sleep hygiene and tracking some things and just making sure that that is optimal. Planning in advance, the client hears her work slate significantly. She clears her work slate significantly over the last 2 weeks leading up to the marathon. So this is something we try to do as well. She's put in so much good work at the office that everybody encourages her, hey, look, focus on this goal. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and you're a valuable asset here. So there's a lot of communication when you're trying to pull something off that can work in your favor. Because Ms. Bear is still a bear, we actually default in weeks two and three to that month one training schedule. So we just went back and just, you know, kept it less coyote-like, first of all, and also just, you know, making sure that we can show up on race day with fresh legs, so important. The final week's a taper week, and it's how we, you know, reach a peak by tapering down. And so we have the client just take some casual walks and do some light agility work at home. That looks different for different people, depending on where they're coming from, obviously. But this story, explains why and how we're doing it, I think. So the final thing to say is that, well, if you've probably figured this out, this programming example is actually a real life story of one of my clients. So what the outcome was, Ms. Bear, she got to the starting line ready to run. Even if she felt a little bit of trepidation about this marathon undertaking, it was a big deal for her. There were a few blisters and some chafing, a couple of mental ups and downs, and a little bit of GI distress. But in the end, she successfully finished her first marathon in the time of 5 hours, 4 minutes, 32 seconds. So this was a wonderful victory for this client and a great example of how to leverage your knowledge of the animal kingdom to achieve success. You can use this example, I think, to take your training in just about any direction that interests you. You know, just be creative and open-minded. And so in kind of closing this up, I would say I am going to provide some other case studies because I think they're fun and, you know, they're actually all true stories. In fact, the ones that are going to be coming up next were actually written by those clients, and I helped them to edit them. But that we'll save that for another time. Just want to give you some ideas about, first of all, you know, reviewing the beautiful elements of program design and the unlimited amount of flexibility and creativity that we can get in there. We want to monitor things, but then in the end, if we are, you know, relatively consistent and persistent, we can get the results, and so can you. So guys, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate it. If you have the ability to share, like, subscribe, rate, review the show, I would be so appreciative because I appreciate you. Until next time, this is Coach Jay-Z signing out from the Lifetime Athlete Podcast.